morgan-outdoors.com.
Last week on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Shantira Jackson warned us about a future with robot teachers.
Problem is, if we pay the robots the way we pay teachers, they will revolt.
That's true.
I'm Nagin Farsad, filling in for Peter Sagal. Join me in our robot-free panel as we talk to actress Olivia Munn on this week's Wait, Wait, the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Have our architectural marvels, the Taj Mahal or the Empire State Building maybe, but how many of us love it enough to recreate it in our living room? I'm Meg Wolitzer, and on this week's Selected Shorts, fiction about a truly extreme home makeover. Don't miss it.
Selected Shorts, Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
This week in This American Life, when Davey was 12, his mother started channeling the spirit of a 500-year-old Buddhist monk named Aaron. Having an ancient being around the house changed everything in their family, mostly for the better. But incredibly, over a decade later, they have never sat down and discussed whether they believe Aaron is real. This week, they finally do.
So he's not real.
He says, does it matter if he's real?
This American Life, tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. And today, my guest is Bethel, New York resident, Leah Maidenbaum. Leah was born in New York City, and her family moved to Israel when she was 3. And she lived there until she was 11. We'll hear about that and what her life was like when her family moved once again to Switzerland and then back to New York City. Leah has also lived for a considerable time in Spain and has had what you would consider a multicultural life. But here's a question. How does a nice Jewish girl become a successful flamenco dancer touring with the likes of Jose Greco? We're going to find out, so sit back and relax and enjoy my conversation with Leah Maidenbaum. Leah Maidenbaum, welcome to Catskill Character. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thank you, Donna. It's my pleasure to speak with you and actually be aired on Catskill Character.
Well, thank you. When I first spoke with you, you know, I was so enthralled at times. You know, I take copious notes, but I sometimes forgot to take notes. And even with that, I've got tons of notes. So where do we start? And I thought, why don't we start by you telling the listener about your years in Israel and what learning about, and I'm quoting you here, Judaism from the heart means.
I was 3 years old when my parents moved to Israel, and I grew up in Jerusalem in a half religious neighborhood and half conservative. I grew up going to religious schools. The beauty of Judaism in Israel is you're living Judaism through all the traditions. You learn through song, through music, through different rituals, and obviously the culture. You learn how to appreciate Judaism. Family is important, and it just was a feeling of belonging. Your neighbors were your family. Your neighborhood was safe. You could go anywhere because you felt like you were being taken care of by the whole community. It's not just about yourself.
You mentioned when we were talking that first time that Sullivan County reminds you of your years in Israel. How so?
I love Sullivan County for the diversity. I really learned to appreciate through the years how wonderful it is to actually have different types of culture, people living together in the same county, having to deal with each other, having to deal with our differences. And that very much I felt growing up also in a neighborhood where I was growing up in a family that wasn't religious, in a neighborhood of Orthodox Jews. We went a lot to the Old City where it was a mix of Christian, Arab culture with Judaism, Armenians living there. I loved those years. It was in the 1970s where it was more of a mix. Fortunately, I do see when I go back that it's very separated into two extreme groups now, mostly. More so the Orthodox Jewish community and the Muslim community are very separate. It doesn't feel as much of a mix anymore as it did when I was a kid. I do love in Sullivan County having that mix here, the Hasidic Jewish people, Orthodox Jews, liberal, and then you have the whole mix of other cultures too, Catholics and all diverse forms of Christianity, and even Muslims up here living too. So it's beautiful. I love Sullivan County for that.
Having that wonderful experience for the first 9 years of your life, you were 3 when you moved there. At 11, your father decided to pursue a study of Jungian psychoanalysis at the Jungian Institute in Switzerland. So I'm thinking that must have been quite a shock to your system.
The move was a big move. I was very young still and impressionable. And yes, moving to Switzerland where everything was so organized, the language was completely different. I had to meet new children, new friends, and I didn't feel at all part of the community because I was a foreigner. Yes, it was quite a shock to the system coming from Israel where everything was quite chaotic, but you lived within that chaos. And I did love that chaos. I did come from it where nothing functioned on time. You know, the trains never came on time. And then suddenly you're getting into Zurich where everything, when the train schedule said 8 a.m., it exactly to the dot it arrived, as opposed to just waiting there or maybe the train not showing up, which would have happened in Israel.
So you were educated in Israel and Switzerland. These are two entirely different educations. I think that you told me when you were in Switzerland, that's when you learned to read and write English, and you also learned to ice skate, which, of course, you weren't going to learn in Israel. Then when you graduated from eighth grade in Switzerland, your parents brought you back to the U.S., where you lived in the Bronx and attended John F. Kennedy High School. Tell us about that.
Well, that was quite a shock. I came from a very small school. We were in an international school in Switzerland, and the school only had 70 kids in all. And so moving back to the United States and going into a high school with 6,000, over 6,000 kids with escalators, guards, it was quite a shock. My mother felt that it would be good for me to get into the real world and see what it was like and not be so protected and sheltered. So it was a great learning experience for me going to school, to high school in John F. Kennedy. And the beautiful thing was it was the first time ever in my life where I went to school 4 years in a row without changing schools. I'd always changed schools in Israel and then in Switzerland and then moving to the United States, at least John F. Kennedy, I was there for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a big difference in a kid's life. You feel like you have roots now. You're grounded. Well, you told me for gym class, you elected to take roller disco. So that really says it all, doesn't it, Leah?
For me, it was quite a shock going into the school because it was, I would say, probably at least 75% Hispanic, African-American, other cultures, but I was the minority in that school. And so I really was drawn, because coming from Israel, I was drawn a lot to the Latino kids, the Greek kids in my school. I felt more connected to those cultures. And then, yes, I loved roller disco. That was definitely my favorite gym class. I was a disco girl.
You didn't have a disco ball in the gym, did you?
No, not at all. Mostly we did it outside, actually, in the tennis courts, I remember.
And you had one of the gym teachers was teaching this class, or did you have kids teaching this class?
Oh, no. It was two gym teachers who were very much They were both women, and they were both very, very good roller disco skaters. And so I guess they felt it would be fun to introduce it as a class for the school.
I wish they had had something like that when I went to school, but no, not exactly. So what do you think is the best part, besides the fact that you were there for 4 years, what was the best part of this high school experience?
I would say the best part was, I mean, at the time, I guess it didn't feel like it was the best part. I felt very different. I felt... I didn't feel like I belonged, like I had that feeling that I was an outsider, a foreigner, because I had moved back to the States after being out for over 11 years. Mm. So I think it really did strengthen me to stand for myself, to not worry about what other people thought about me, and to just be myself and not try to fit in, because yeah. I wasn't going to fit in as maybe other people wanted to see me fit in. I was going to fit in my own way, do my own thing, go on my own rhythm.
That's fantastic, though. That's a really good experience to have, to learn to really depend on yourself and trust yourself. Did you have any ideas about what you wanted to do after high school?
No, I didn't. I did take some dance classes outside of school as extracurricular activities, like jazz dancing. And I loved the dance, and I loved Spanish. I learned Spanish in that school because I did come from Switzerland knowing some German, but they didn't offer German in the school. So I just started taking Spanish over there and was interested in Spanish, Latin culture.
You know, it's interesting. I just had this thought. I've interviewed a couple of psychics, and these are people that believe in reincarnation. And it occurred to me that maybe one time long ago, you were a flamenco dancer from Spain. And that's why you gravitate back to your... to this this persona from long ago. What do you think of that idea?
I definitely, once I was living in Spain, I definitely did feel like it could possibly be that in a different life I was a dancer. I was part of the whole gypsy culture.
Yeah. The funny thing about that is, too, that you told me you really started to learn to dance when you were in Switzerland and you were ice skating. And that's really where your first kind of sense of yourself as a dancer came in. But then when you went back and lived in the Bronx, of course, you were roller disco, discoing. And I think you did you get in touch with or get exposed to flamenco at that point?
No, I didn't. I think as a child, I remember for Purim, one of the Jewish holidays, which is closest, I guess, to Halloween in terms of just it's not like Halloween other than the fact that we do dress in costume. And my mother had asked me what costume I wanted, and I remembered saying flamenco. Seen it on an album cover.
I don't know, Leah. Oh. I think maybe you were a flamenco dancer, but we'll circle around to that. We're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. We'll take a short break and return with more from today's guest, Leah Maidenbaum. We'll be right back.
On This Old House Radio Hour, now that it's getting warmer, it's time to give your garage door the attention it deserves.
Once a year, you can spray some silicone spray in the pivot point. Those are all the hinges. Those get some wear and tear.
Plus, Senior Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy takes us to his childhood home in Sacramento, California. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Thomas Evans, editor-in-chief of NPR. It's a precarious time for press freedom. At NPR and the station, we don't ask permission to report the news. We do this work without fear or favor, because the American public has a right to know what's being done in their name. Our mission is clear, and your support is essential. Make your donation to the station today, and thank you for standing with us.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's monthly prayer meetings infuse worship with the furor of Christian nationalism.
Let every round find its mark and let justice be executed swiftly and without remorse. Overwhelming violence of action against those who deserve no mercy.
He's taken all these verses about violence out of context and thrown them all together.
Inside Hegseth's holy war on this week's On the Media from WNYC. This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and today I'm speaking with Leah Maidenbaum. In the first half of the show, Leah took us on an adventure, which was her peripatetic life, moving from New York to Israel to Switzerland and then to the Bronx, all in the span of 13 years. She's traveled the world, also living in Spain, where she got in touch with a passion for flamenco. Let's learn about that passion and how it came to be. Leah, you minored in Spanish when you went to Syracuse University, and you found most of your inspirational teachers in the Spanish department.
Yes, a little gem inside of Syracuse University. I was accepted into the School of Communications, but I decided to minor in Spanish as well. One of my professors showed us a lot of films from South America, Central America, from Spain, and I started discovering a whole other world.
Didn't you tell me that she showed you the film Carmen?
Yes, I think that was my first spark to flamenco. The film Carmen by Carlos Saura. It was very inspiring film, which drew me to Madrid eventually to study flamenco.
You went to London for half a year, but finally you found yourself for the second half of that junior year in Madrid.
That's where I got a taste of it live. I was living with a family in Madrid. They recommended that I study with a neighbor. The neighbor was a single mother living with her son, and I would go up once a week with my little cassette player, and she would move around all the furniture in the kitchen, and she taught me sevillanas, which are more pop flamenco dances from Sevilla. It's very choreographed, and there are short little pieces that you can learn much faster than learning the actual flamenco, which is much more intricate and takes many more years to learn. And I would watch her and her son, who would argue and fight, but suddenly she'd move me to the side, said, "No, that's not how you do it." She would bring him in and have him demonstrate the steps, and it was just so beautiful watching them. When they were dancing, they really had this magic between them. And I felt for the first time that essence of flamenco, and I was learning in her kitchen.
So you had that wonderful experience, but then you had to come back to the U.S. How did you keep flamenco in your life when you came back here?
I was living in New York City, and I was very lucky to meet the right people. I was working in an Italian restaurant. I was very good friends with a young woman there who was learning flamenco too from Italy. Actually, she was Anna Magnani's niece. And she introduced me to one of my first teachers, Jose Molina, who was an inspirational teacher from Madrid, very patient. And he taught us the castanets, sevillanas. He introduced me to real flamenco, to alegría, soleá, all the different palos, they call them, which are the rhythms and singing within flamenco. He had a live guitars in the studios. And the studios where he taught at Basil's was a gem inside of New York City. That was my home away from home.
You saved your money working and you went back to Spain. In fact, you were back and forth between Spain and the US for quite some time. Tell us about your experience touring with Jose Greco.
There was a new teacher. He was from Madrid also, Antonio de Castillo. I was one of the top students of his class at the time. And one day he said to me, Leah, what would you do if I convinced Jose Greco to come out of retirement and take you on tour and you can dance a solo? And I said, you just tell me when. Jose Greco was in his 80s. I was honored to actually dance with him. We got to go to Austin, Texas and San Francisco. Actually, funny enough, kept saying, we're going to Austin, vamos a Austin. And I thought he meant Houston. And that's when I discovered that Austin actually was a city.
We've been talking a lot about flamenco, of course. It would be great if you could give the listener a short, because we don't have a lot of time, but a short condensed history of flamenco.
Flamenco has a lot of history in it. The gypsies do carry the tradition within their culture, within their weddings, baptisms. They celebrate through the singing, the dance, and the music. Flamenco was first and foremost the cante, which was the singing. Cantaor in Spanish, which means singer, is like translated to cantor. The music and the singing from the synagogue that I hear in my soul, I hear through a lot of the flamenco music, but it has a lot of Moorish, Arab influence and Jewish influence before the Inquisition. And so then after we were expelled from Spain, the Jews and the Moors, the tradition was carried out through the gypsies with the gitanos, or the gypsies in Spain. But what came first was the singing, the cante, then the guitar, and then last was the dance. Technique is very important, how you hold your spine, how you practice, and how you do your footwork. But being a Pilates teacher, the core has helped me. And you need a strong core. If people think when you first describe it as the tapping, they think, oh, it's like tap dance. But tap dance is more up and in the air. Flamenco it's a folk dance. So it goes down deep into the ground. You're more grounded when you're doing the footwork.
I would imagine people look at that and they would not understand. It's not as easy as it might look.
No, it's not as easy as it looks. It's interesting because it's evolved. It used to be a lot more the arm work women doing, and men were more focused on the footwork. But then, of course, it was famous dancers like Carmen Amaya brought a lot of the footwork into the female dancing, and then men also dancing with a lot more arm work, intricate arm work now. But everyone has their own style, and all throughout Spain, the styles change as well, more so from Madrid to the south, even though you do have flamenco up in the north, but it's more common from Madrid down. That technique takes many, many hours. And Madrid, because it was the capital and the center, had the most technique. So you had a lot of people coming from everywhere to teach in Madrid. And of course, the madrileños, people who were from Madrid, teaching there. But if you wanted more intricate arm work, more arm styles, was down in the south, you would also go down there to study. But Madrid was known definitely for a lot of the intricate footwork and the fancy footwork and rhythms. And the rhythms are, it's very important that you're in the rhythm because you are keeping it with the guitarist and with the singer. And not only that, you have to know within the singing when to use your footwork, when to quiet it down, and not use it when the singer's singing, when you're calling the singer with your footwork. So it's very intricate and it's very complex. And people don't realize that when they first see it. That's what makes it so hard to improvise too.
I also noticed that a lot of very small children are dancing. So they must start at a very young age. And they're unbelievably good.
Especially the gypsy children grow up with this as part of their culture. They learn it from the womb. Or when you have professional dancers dancing too, or singers, the children hear it in the womb. So it's definitely ingrained in their soul.
You love flamenco, obviously. But for your own personal reasons, at some point you decided to leave Madrid and you got certified to teach Pilates, which you spoke about just a few minutes ago, about how the core work really helps to hold yourself when you're dancing. But I'm assuming that that's quite an undertaking also, learning to be a Pilates instructor.
Yes, well, I actually, through the years of living in the city, before I even moved to Spain, I worked in various Pilates studios, learning through various teachers. When I moved to Spain, and I was at the time teaching English, paying for my classes, my flamenco classes, I was also lucky to find Lara Fermin in Madrid, which she was the first official Pilates instructor who taught. She got certified through Romana Krzyzanowska in New York City, who was like a daughter to Joseph Pilates. So I started working with Lara in Madrid, but she assured me that I had to eventually have to go back if I wanted to continue teaching with her and get certified through Romana, which was the main studio in New York City at the time. So I went back to New York City to study with Romana, yes. And it was a very intricate certification program. It took a year to get certified. And I'm very happy I did it, because I went back to the basics to learn where everything came from, to hear the original stories about Joseph Pilates through Romana. She was in her 90s and an inspiration. And her daughter and granddaughter were both in the studio with her. So I met a lot of wonderful, inspiring instructors. And yes, that's what I did.
People here in this area who want to take Pilates are so fortunate to have the Barn Swallow Studios right there in Calicoon. And you're working now there with Maggie.
Yes, I was very fortunate to meet Maggie Moore actually years ago when I moved up here. At the time, I wasn't teaching Pilates when I first came up, but Maggie Moore also had studied with Romana years even before me. And it was wonderful now reconnecting with her and realizing a lot of similarities that we did have, and the passion for Pilates through that lineage of Pilates. So I'm very happy to be working in her studio now in Calicoon.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really enjoyed it. I think I learned a lot. And I'm going to pop into Calicoon and take one of your classes.
I would love to teach you, Donna.
Yeah, I've never taken Pilates, and I've heard about it for years. So I'm very interested in it. And don't be surprised if you see me there.
Well, I would love to teach you, and I actually enjoy teaching mostly people who haven't even tried it yet. So it's a clean new slate, and I can show you.
Good. Thank you so much, Leah. I really like
talking to you. Thank you, Donna. Thank you.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with today's guest, Leah Maidenbaum. The address for Barn Swallow Studios is 24 Upper Main Street in Calicoon, New York. And the website is barnswallowpilates.com. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs in the 10:30 time slot. This is Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and I thank you so much for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. This week is a live event on the world-changing food scene of Los Angeles. From the iconic host of a radio show chronicling the food there to a young pair of metalhead taco chefs, it's the breadth of eating in L.A. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
I I listen because it's so important to get the news on a national scale, but then also hear the local news, the stories of the people that live in our local community. You know, Radio Catskill, whether you listen to NPR or not, it's your local radio station. While some shows may be political, it's not political to have a local radio station that's focused on the culture and the news of the local area.
Your gift keeps the community engaged and informed. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.